Captain Kirk leads a party from the Starship Enterprise to survey and collect specimens on an unexplored planet. In his arms, Sulu holds a small, long-haired dog-like creature, with a horn on its head, a scaly backbone, and thin gold antennae sprouting from its head.
That should make a good specimen.
Kirk comes up to Sulu, who shivers.
Temperature's starting to drop.
Yeah. At night, it gets down to 120 degrees below zero.
That's nippy.
A crewman falls from a nearby rock, cutting his hand. Kirk and Sulu run up.
What happened? Fell
off that bank, sir. Cut my hand.
Let's see. Get back to the ship. Report to the sick bay.
Yes, sir.
The geologist, wearing blue and yellow overalls, takes out his communicator.
Geological technician Fisher. Ready to beam up.
Right. Locked onto you.
Scotty coordinates with his assistant.
Energized.
Fisher starts to appear, but his image doesn't stabilize. A red warning light flashes on the transporter console. Scotty checks his readings.
Voyager engagement.
Wilson, the transporter technician, tries again. Fisher materializes and steps off the transporter platform.
What happened?
I took a flop.
Onto what?
I don't know. Some kind of yellow ore.
Magnetic. Decontaminate that uniform.
Yes, sir.
That acted like a burnout.
Scotty and Wilson go back to the transporter control desk to make checks.
Captain Kirk, ready to beam up.
Just one moment, Captain.
He presses some buttons and checks readings on a screen.
It checks out okay now. You better go get a synchronic meter so we can double check.
Yes, sir.
Wilson goes while Spotty completes his checks.
All right, Captain. Locked onto you.
He energizes the system. The pads in the transporter chamber glow. Kirk appears in outline, his silhouette sparkling with particles of yellow light as he starts to materialize. But the process takes longer than normal, and when the transportation is complete, the captain, in his gold top and black trousers, blinks, puts his hand to his head, and staggers as he steps off the platform. Scotty goes over to him.
Are you all right, Captain?
It's all right. Just a little dizzy.
Here, let me give you a hand.
I can't get through there. Nothing serious. Don't leave the transporter room unattended, Wilson. We'll be right back, sir.
As the doors close behind Kirk and Scotty, the transporter energizes again, and a figure beams up wearing the standard gold top and black trousers of the Enterprise command personnel. The figure turns round, revealing his face. It's Captain Kirk. But his expression is malign and his eyes demonic as he scans the empty transporter room.
Space. The final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Star Trek, created by Gene Roddenberry. Starring William Shatner, also starring Leonard Nimoy as Mr. Spock. The Enemy Within.
Captain's log, stardate 1672.1. Specimen gathering mission on planet Alpha 177. Unknown to any of us during this time, a duplicate of me, some strange alter ego, had been created by the transporter malfunction.
The evil-looking duplicate of Captain Kirk goes over to the transporter control desk, spreading his hands over it covetously, a malevolent glint in his eye. Wilson returns. Kirk turns his head away.
Captain, are you all right, sir? Can I give you a hand, sir?
Kirk goes to the door.
Captain?
The duplicate looks back with a sinister smile.
Section 3 officers, please check communication lines.
Thank you. It might profit you to let Dr. McCoy give you the once-over.
All right, engineer, I'll have my engines looked to.
The real Captain Kirk steps into his quarters with a careworn sigh. Yeoman Rand, sitting at his desk, gets to her feet.
Ship's manifest, sir. I think they're in order now.
Thank you, Yeoman.
I've checked.
That's all.
Yes, sir.
She goes. Kirk leans wearily against the wall, then goes to his bed and lies on his back, putting the data files Rand has given him on a shelf above his head. In the dispensary, as McCoy tends to the geology technician's injured hand, the duplicate Kirk comes in.
You picked a good day, Fisher. Business has been lousy. What'd you do, take a fall on purpose so you could get a little vacation?
Sorry, I'm brandy.
I'm back to duty status, Fisher. I have no sympathy for clumsiness.
No, sir.
Fisher gets up.
The hand's much better, sir.
The duplicate, standing with his back to McCoy and the geologist, doesn't turn around. Fisher goes.
What can I do for you, Jim?
I said give me the brandy!
He grasps the stunned doctor by the back of the neck. McCoy opens the semi-transparent fluted door of a cabinet. Kirk grabs a tall glass bottle, removes the stopper, glares at McCoy, and goes. In the corridor, the duplicate swigs from the bottle. He finds himself outside Yeoman Janice Rand's private quarters and slips inside. The rooms are empty. Swigging from the bottle, he studies an abstract painting on an easel and turns from it with a contemptuous smile.
Come in.
Spock steps into Kirk's quarters.
Yes, Mr. Spock, what is it?
Is there something I can do for you, Captain?
Like what?
Well, Dr. McCoy seemed to think that I should check on you.
That's nice.
Spock stands, hands on hips.
Come on, Spock, I know that look. What is it?
Well, our good doctor said that you were acting like a wild man demanded brandy.
Our good doctor's been putting you on again.
Well, in that case, if you'll excuse the intrusion, Captain, I'll get back to my work.
I'll tell him you were properly annoyed.
Captain.
Later, in the transporter room, Scotty holds the alien dog specimen.
What is it, Scotty? Transporter breakdown, sir. Continue circuit testing. We beamed up this animal, and well, look for yourself. It's in this specimen case.
He shows them an identical animal.
Yes? A few seconds after they sent this one up through the transporter, that duplicate appeared. Except it's not a duplicate. It's an opposite. Two of the same animal, but different. One gentle, this. One mean and fierce, that. Some kind of savage, ferocious opposite. Captain, we don't dare send Mr. Sulu and the landing party up. If this should happen to a man...
Kirk's eyes narrow.
Oh, my...
The door to Yeoman Rand's quarters open. Janice comes in and puts down her things. She goes over to a door by her bedroom area, which revolves to reveal a vanity unit. Janice adjusts her hair in the mirror. The duplicate Kirk appears behind the screen that separates the bedroom from the living area and watches her. He steps out, eyes smoldering. Janice sees him and jumps. He takes a swig from the bottle.
Oh, Captain, you're startling me. Is there something that you...
The duplicate looks at her, taking the bottle from his lips and rolling the brandy around in his mouth before swallowing. Janice returns his gaze uneasily.
Can I help you, Captain?
Jim will do here, Janice.
Oh.
You're too beautiful to ignore. Too much woman.
He puts down the bottle, comes towards her. and stands with his hands on his hips.
We've both been pretending too long. Stop pretending. Let's stop pretending. Come here, Janice. Don't fight me. Don't fight me, Janice.
He kisses her.
Just a minute, Janice.
He forces his open mouth down on hers.
Just a minute!
He throws her to the ground and falls on top of her. She scratches his face. She scrambles away, ducking behind the painting on the easel. Kirk approaches. She shoves it at him. She runs for the door. Fisher is passing by.
Callister's back! Callister's back!
Fisher runs to the intercom.
Geological technician Fisher. Deck 12, section...
Kirk leaps on Fisher and punches him savagely.
Me? My yeoman said that? I've been resting here since you left me. Alone, Mr. Spock.
Captain, Dr. McCoy reports that you demanded this brandy in sick bay and left with it. I found this bottle in Yeoman Rand's quarters.
Not true. I haven't been to the sick bay. Let's find out what's going on.
Spock follows Kirk out of his quarters and into a nearby lift.
Sick bay.
As the lift doors close, the duplicate appears in the corridor, knuckles bleeding, three long scratch marks on his cheek. He looks warily up and down the corridor before stealthily making for the captain's private quarters. Inside, he goes over to Kirk's bed and lies down, nursing his bruised fist and bringing his bloody knuckles to his mouth with a swift, wolfish movement. In the dispensary, Spock, McCoy, and the real Kirk listen to Janice.
And he kissed me and he said that he was the captain. And he could order me. I didn't know what to do. When you mentioned the feelings we've been hiding, and you started talking about us.
Us?
Well, we... He is the captain. I couldn't just...
She looks up at Kirk.
You started hurting me. I had to fight you, scratch your face.
Yeoman. Look at me. Look at me. Look at my face. Are there any scratches?
She looks at his face in surprise.
I was sure I scratched you. I was frightened, maybe.
Yeoman. I was in my room. It wasn't me.
Sir, Fisher saw you too.
Fisher's...
If it hadn't been...
She looks away.
I can understand. I don't want to get you into trouble. I wouldn't have even mentioned it.
It wasn't me.
It was you, sir.
Fisher's bruised face appears in the door through from sickbay.
Do you know what you're saying?
Yes, I know what I'm saying.
Back to that bed, Bucko. Come on, let's go.
With a baffled frown, Kirk comes back over to where Spock is standing. Yeoman Rand, sitting at his side, lowers her head and sobs.
Go now, Yeoman.
She gets up, smooths down the back of her short red uniform dress and leaves. Kirk looks at Spock, mystified.
There's only one logical answer. We have an imposter aboard.
Captain's log, stardate 1672.9. On the planet's surface, temperatures are beginning to drop. Our landing party there in growing jeopardy due to the malfunction of the ship's transporter. An unexplained duplicate of myself definitely exists.
How did all this happen?
I don't know, sir. But when Fisher came up, his suit was covered with a soft yellow ore. It had highly unusual properties. May have caused an overload. Can't tell. Not yet.
Does the transporter work at all?
Yes, sir. But we don't dare bring up the landing party. It might be duplicated like this animal.
How long will it take you to find the trouble?
Can't say, sir.
We just can't leave those four men down there. It's getting dark. They'll die. The surface temperature of that planet goes down to 120 degrees below zero at night.
We're doing everything we can, sir.
Yes, I know, Scotty.
Cradling the passive alien dog in his arms, he goes over to Spock, standing by the transportation platform.
About your double, Captain.
Yes, Yes. We'll have to find him. Search parties, Mr. Spock, organized search parties.
Can't take a chance on killing it. We have no previous experience, no way of knowing what would happen to you.
That's right, we don't know. But the men have to be armed. The men are to be armed, but the phase is locked. I repeat, locked on setting number one. There can't be any chance of him being killed. He's to be taken without... If the men are forced to fire, he can't be killed.
How should we explain it to them, Captain? The search parties are to capture you.
Tell them.
Search parties, Captain.
Yes, I'll make an announcement to the entire crew. Tell them what happened. It's a good crew. They deserve to know.
Captain, no disrespect intended, but you must surely realize you can't announce the full truth to the crew. You're the captain of this ship. You haven't the right to be vulnerable in the eyes of the crew. You can't afford the luxury of being anything less than perfect. If you do, they lose faith, and you lose command.
Yes, I do know that, Mr. Spock.
He gives him the dog.
What I don't know is why I forgot that just now.
Spock looks at him with a worried frown. Kirk, equally apprehensive, goes to the door.
Mr. Spock.
Kirk turns back in the doorway.
If you see me slipping again, your orders... Your orders... are to tell me.
Understood, Captain.
Kirk goes. Spock turns back, cradling the alien dog in his arms.
Captain's log, stardate 1673.1. Something has happened to me. Somehow, in being duplicated, I have lost my strength of will. Decisions are becoming more and more difficult.
This is the captain speaking. There's an imposter aboard the ship. A man who looks exactly like me and is pretending to be me. This man is dangerous. Utmost caution is to be observed. All crew members are to arm themselves. The imposter may be identified by scratches on his face. Repeat. The imposter may be identified by scratches on his face. Section chiefs, assign personnel to the search. All search parties report to Mr. Spock for assignment.
Spock has come to stand beside the captain's chair.
Something.
About the phaser weapons. To be set for stunning force and lock.
Oh, yes, yes. All hand phasers must be set on base cycle. Stunning force.
The imposter is not to be injured. Use minimum force. Repeat. The imposter is not to be injured.
The duplicate knocks books from a shelf.
I'm Captain Kirk.
He smashes the view screen.
I'm Captain Kirk!
His face twisted with rage and beaded with sweat. The duplicate touches the scratch marks on his face, goes over to a mirror, and glares at his reflection.
I'm Captain Kirk.
From among the toiletries beneath the mirror, he finds a jar of flesh-colored ointment, dips a finger in the jar and dabs it on the three parallel scratches on his cheek. They become less noticeable. With a manic laugh, he puts on some more ointment. He pats his face with a towel, goes to the door and opens it. Crewmen pass by in the corridor.
Wilson!
Sir?
Wilson, give me your phaser.
Yes, sir.
Wilson hands it over.
How you been?
Fine, sir.
The duplicate attacks Wilson. On the planet's surface...
How's it going down there, Mr. Super?
It's already... 20 degrees below zero. And exactly call it balmy.
Isn't there any way we can help them?
thermal heaters were transported down. They duplicated. They won't operate.
Then we've got to get those men up.
Mr. Spock?
Spock here.
Transporter technician Wilson found injured near the captain's cabin. He says the imposter attacked him, called him by name, took his hand phaser.
Acknowledge. Continue the search.
We've got to find him before he... Well, how?
Apparently, this double, however different in temperament, has your knowledge of the ship. Its crew, its devices. This being the case, perhaps we can outguess him by determining his next move. Knowing how the ship is laid out, where would you go to elude a mass search?
Kirk, sitting at the briefing room table, thinks.
The lower levels. The engineering deck.
Moments later, Kirk and Spock are down on the engineering deck, walking through the control room. They look through the grill that separates off the long, cathedral-like chamber containing the main power conduits. Spock draws his phaser.
Set and locked on base cycle to stun, not to kill.
They walk on a little further. Spock glances down at Kirk's phaser, still in his belt.
What about your phaser, Captain?
Reluctantly, Kirk brings out the small black and silver pistol-like weapon.
Don't you think we ought to get some help, Captain?
No. I don't want anyone else to see me.
Captain, you ordered me to tell you.
Mr. Spock, if I'm to be the captain, I've got to act like one.
Above them, on top of a row of squat, bulky structures, the duplicate watches as Spock and the captain split up and continue their search. As Spock disappears from view, the duplicate slips down to the floor between two of the towers. The duplicate looks around, eyes alert. He's wearing a standard gold Starfleet top. Kirk has put on a different wraparound jacket. It's the only way they can be told apart. Kirk looks at the phaser he holds reluctantly in his hand. The duplicate peers out from between two of the towers and starts to follow the captain. Kirk vanishes behind a piece of machinery and slips through a narrow corridor into another part of the engineering deck. Lights throw the duplicate's shadow on the wall as he follows him. Kirk's eyes scan the deck for possible hiding places. Intuitively, he whips round and sees the duplicate standing a little way behind him, a phaser in his hand. With deliberate slowness, Kirk steps out from behind the transparent screen that separates them. He advances on the duplicate, who backs away, phaser at the ready, puzzlement in his eyes.
You can't hurt me.
The duplicate's eyes waver.
You can't kill me.
Kirk takes a step closer. The duplicate backs away, raising his phaser.
You can't. Don't you understand? I'm part of you. You need me. I need you.
Silently, Spock appears behind the duplicate and applies a nerve pinch to his shoulder. The duplicate collapses.
I don't need you.
The duplicate discharges his phaser as he falls, blasting a hole in a nearby conduit. Kirk gazes down at the unconscious figure and crouches down beside it. Later, McCoy comes up to Spock in the door to sickbay.
He'll be regaining consciousness soon and not knowing what his physical state is. I don't think I'd dare give him a tranquilizer in a kind.
Kirk gets up from the view screen on Spock's desk.
I think we'd better bind him.
Yes. Yes, all right.
With a concerned look at Kirk, McCoy goes back to the sick bay.
What's the matter with me?
Judging from my observations, Captain, you're rapidly losing the power of decision.
You have a point, Spock?
Yes. Always, Doctor. We have here an unusual opportunity to appraise the human mind.
or to examine, in Earth terms, the roles of good and evil in a man. His negative side, which you call hostility, lust, violence. And his positive side, which Earth people express as compassion, love, tenderness.
It's the captain's guts you're analyzing. Are you aware of that, Spock?
Yes. And what is it that makes one man an exceptional leader? We see here indications that it is his negative side which makes him strong. That his evil side, if you will, properly controlled and disciplined, is vital to his strength. Your negative side, removed from you, the power of command begins to elude you.
What is your point, Mr. Spock?
If your power of command continues to weaken, you'll soon be unable to function as captain. You must be prepared for that.
You have your intellect, Jim. You can fight with that.
For how long?
If I seem insensitive to what you're going through, Captain, understand. It's the way I am.
Captain Kirk.
Scotty is examining the hole, the duplicate blue in the conduit.
Kirk here.
Mr. Scott, sir, on the lower level of the engineering deck.
I found a new trouble with the transporter. The casing has a wide gap ripped in it. The main circuits have been burned through. The abort control circuit is gone altogether.
Kirk's shoulders sag. On the planet's surface, Sulu and his men huddle together.
Can you give us a status report, Captain? Temperature's still dropping. Now 41 degrees below zero.
I've located the trouble. It shouldn't be much longer.
Do you think you might be able to find a long rope somewhere and lower us down a pot of hot coffee?
Kirk wraps his knuckles on the desktop in frustration.
I'll see what we can do.
Rice wine will do if you're short on coffee.
Kirk closes the channel and looks over at McCoy and Spock, standing either side of the bed, where the duplicate is held down with restraints.
Engineering deck, Kirk here.
Scott here, Captain.
That unit's got a status report.
The transporter unit ionizer. Nothing much left of it, sir.
How bad is it?
We can't repair it in less than a week.
Captain's log, stardate 1673.5. Transporter still inoperable. My negative self is under restraint in sickbay. My own indecisiveness growing. My force of will steadily weakening. On the planet, condition critical. Surface temperature is 75 degrees below zero. Still dropping.
On the planet's surface, Sulu fires his phaser at a nearby rock. The rock glows red. Sulu and his three companions huddle around it for warmth.
I think we ought to give room service another call. That coffee's taking too long. Enterprise, this is Sulu.
Kirk here, Mr. Sulu.
Outline director to the captain. Are we that far gone?
I gave everybody the afternoon off. I'm watching the store.
How is it down there?
Oh, lovely. Except that the frost is building up. We're using hand phasers to keep the rocks. One phaser quit on us. Three still operating. Any possibility of getting us back aboard before the skiing season opens down here?
Kirk bows his head.
This is Spock, Mr. Sulu. You'll have to hold on a little longer. There's no other way. Survival procedures, Mr. Sulu.
Per your training program, Mr. Spock.
In his sickbay bed, the duplicate strains against his restraints. McCoy puts his hands on the duplicate's chest and gently pushes him back down on the mattress, waiting until he lapses into unconsciousness. McCoy checks the bioscreen above the bed. All the readings are too high. Kirk appears in the doorway.
What happened?
Apparently, the body functioning weakened during the duplication process. In fact, I failed to consider.
He's not dying.
Yes, he is.
Help me.
How can he die? How can I survive without him?
I don't know, Jim.
Kirk sits beside the bed.
be afraid.
He grasps the duplicate's hand.
Here's my hand. Hold on. You don't have to be afraid. I won't let go. Hold on.
You won't be afraid if you use your mind and think. Think, you can do it, that's it.
The duplicate looks at Kirk intently. The captain keeps a firm grip on his hand. His vital signs normalize, and his head drops back onto the bed.
Jim, he is back.
McCoy hurries over to the bed. Kirk looks up at him and gets to his feet, gasping with exhaustion. The doctor goes to fetch some brandy.
Jim, you can use that brandy now. In fact, I'll join you.
I have to take him back. Inside myself. I can't survive without him. I don't want to take him back. He's like an animal. A thoughtless, brutal animal. And yet it's me. Me.
McCoy returns.
You're no different than anyone else. We all have our darker side. We need it. It's half of what we are. It's not really ugly. It's human.
Human?
Yes, human. A lot of what he is makes you the man you are.
God forbid I should have to agree with Spock, but he was right. Without the negative side, you wouldn't be the captain. You couldn't be, and you know it. Your strength of command lies mostly in him.
The duplicate is listening.
What do I have?
You have the goodness.
Not enough. I have a ship to command.
The intelligence, the logic, it appears you have has most of that. And perhaps that's where man's essential courage comes from. For you see, he was afraid, and you weren't.
Captain Kirk?
Kirk here.
Spock here. Would you come to the transporter room? We think we may have found an answer.
Coming.
As Kirk goes, the duplicate looks up from his bed with a sinister smile, closes his eyes, and leans his head back, laughing.
What is it? We found a way to get the transporter working, sir.
We've attached to some bypass and leader circuits to compensate for the difference. Tied directly into the impulse engines.
Yes.
There shouldn't be more than a 5-point variation in the velocity balance. I suggest we send the animal through. Captain.
Yes, go ahead.
Scotty and Spock go over to the cage containing the alien animal's fierce duplicate.
I'll grab him by the scruff of the neck and hold him as long as I can.
Spock stands by with a hypo-sprayer. Scotty, avoiding the snapping teeth and sharp pointed horn, seizes the animal.
Don't hurt him.
It's painless and quick. The animal will be unconscious for only a few minutes.
Spock takes it to the transporter platform, and Wilson follows with its mildly behaved double.
If this doesn't work, I don't know what will.
Spock and Wilson place both animals on the same transporter pad, then step away from the platform while Scotty sets the coordinates. Kirk watches the two animals with concern.
Energize.
The animals disappear. Kirk turns his eyes from the transporter platform to Spock, but takes no part in making any decisions. Spock turns to Scotty.
Reverse.
McCoy comes in. Everyone watches. Scotty operates the controls himself. Kirk, looking anxious and distressed, turns away from the transporter platform. The reunited animal appears on the transporter pad lying on its side, eyes closed. Spock and McCoy hurry over to examine it. They look up at Scotty and Kirk.
The shock of putting him back together seems to have been too much for him.
He's dead, Jim.
Captain's log, stardate 1673.1.
Entry made by Second Officer Spock. Captain Kirk retains command of this vessel, but his force of will rapidly fading. Condition of landing party, critical. Transporter unit still under repair.
In the dispensary, McCoy picks up the dog.
Autopsy in depth. Hurry.
As the crewman takes the body away, Spock comes in. Kirk sits in a corner.
I don't know. Animal could have died of some kind of shock.
For once, I agree with you, Doctor.
I said could have, Mr. Spock. We won't know until we get a full post-mortem.
No autopsy is necessary to know that the animal was terrified, confused. It was split into two halves and suddenly thrust back together again. Thus, shock, induced by blind terror.
Yes, yes, that sounds likely.
It couldn't understand. You can. You have your intelligence controlling your fear.
Get the transporter room ready.
Could be if, maybe, all guesswork so far. Just theory. Jim, why don't you give me a chance to do an autopsy and let Spock check out the transporter circuits again?
That sounds reasonable. We should double check everything.
Aren't you forgetting something, Captain?
No, I don't think I forgot.
Your men on the planet's surface, how much time do they have left?
Yes, that's right, the men. We have to take the chance, Bones. Their lives...
Suppose it wasn't shock, Jim. Suppose death was caused by a transporter malfunction. Then you'd die. They'd die anyway. Jim, you can't risk your life on a theory.
Being split in two halves is no theory with me, Doctor. I have a human half, you see, as well as an alien half, submerged, constantly at war with each other. Personal experience, Doctor. I survive it because my intelligence wins out over both, makes them live together. Your intelligence would enable you to survive as well.
Kirk looks from Spock to McCoy and back in an agony of indecision. He stands, wringing his hands.
Help me. Somebody. Make the decision.
Are you relinquishing your command, Captain?
Kirk straightens up.
No. No, I'm not.
Well, then we can't help you, Jim. The decision is yours.
Mr. Spock, ready the transporter room. Bones, continue the autopsy.
Spock and McCoy both leave. Kirk puts a hand to his forehead, his brow furrowing with worry. He goes over to the doorway between the dispensary and the sickbay and looks through at the duplicate. His shoulders sag and he bows his head. Kirk comes over to where the duplicate lies strapped down on his back, eyes closed. The captain props a hand on the end of the bed to steady himself.
Captain Kirk, I have a tie-in with Sulu now.
On the planet's surface, the crew lie motionless, powdered with frost.
Kirk here.
Captain. Kirk. Sulu. Here. 117 below. Can't last much longer.
Sulu huddles under a piece of canvas. Kirk listens, distressed.
Can't see clearly. Doctor, to read top indicator. Think the cold penetrating. Communicator. Two men. Unconscious. No time. No. Can't wait. No time.
Mr. Sulu. Mr. Sulu.
Desolate, Kirk glances back at the biobed and gets up from the chair, shaking his head.
Can't wait. Can't let them die.
What are you gonna do?
Go through the transporter. Both of us.
He goes over to the bed and starts undoing the restraining straps.
There's nothing I can do to stop you.
Kirk takes his phaser from his belt.
It's what I have to do.
He points it at the duplicate.
It's what I have to do. What we have to do.
The duplicate sits up, looking at the phaser and waving a dismissive hand.
I won't fight you anymore. Oh, I feel so weak.
He stands.
I'll be glad when this is over.
He blinks, eyes rolling back in his head, and he swoons. Kirk catches him. The duplicate pushes Kirk back against the wall. He forces the phaser from Kirk's hand and knocks him out. Later, wearing an identical wraparound uniform top like Kirk's, he meets Rand stepping from a lift.
Janice, hello.
Captain,
Yeoman, I owe you an explanation.
No.
Yes, I do. The transporter malfunctioned, divided me, created a duplicate. The animal part of me came to your cabin. He even scratched me to make us look more alike. I'd like the chance to explain it to you.
He goes into the lift.
You don't mind if I come to your cabin later?
No, sir.
He smiles.
Bridge.
Janice stares uncertainly as the doors close.
No word from Mr. Sellers, sir.
Prepare to leave order, Mr. Farrell. Well?
Captain!
I gave you an order, Mr. Farrell.
But what about...
They can't be saved. Prepare to leave orbit.
Yes, sir.
Then I thought we planned...
I've changed my mind. Go back to your station, Mr. Spock.
Spock goes back to the upper level. The duplicate smiles to himself. The real Kirk arrives on the bridge with McCoy. The duplicate barks an order.
Grab him. He's the imposter.
No!
McCoy, he's fooled you.
He attacked him.
The duplicate leaps from the captain's chair.
Mr. Spock, you know who I am. You know what that is.
Mr. Spock, which one?
What do we do?
Spock goes over to the real Kirk.
We'll let the captain handle this.
I'm the captain. Isn't that obvious? Look at his face. Remember the scratches? Look how he's tried to hide them. He wants you to think that he's Captain Kirk. You know who I am.
The real Kirk, standing between Spock and McCoy on the upper platform, glances at each of them in turn, then steps hesitantly down, past the captain's chair, into the central well.
Yes, I know. You want to kill me, don't you? Farrell! James! Grab him, he'll destroy the ship! I'm the captain! Don't you understand? I'm captain of the ship!
He grabs the helmsman.
It's my ship! My ship! It's mine!
He pulls out a phaser. Kirk, staggering weakly, advances towards him.
I'll kill you. Can half a man live?
Kirk steps towards him.
If you don't step, you'll die. Then we'll both die.
Kirk keeps coming. The duplicate's face crumples.
Please. I don't want to. Don't make me. Don't make me.
Kirk reaches out, takes the phaser from the duplicate's unresisting hand, and throws it away.
I don't want to go back. Please! I want to live! You will. Both of us. I want to live!
Kirk pulls the duplicate towards him, drawing the frightened man's head onto his chest and embracing him tightly. Later, he and Spock help him up onto the transporter platform.
I have to hold on to him, Captain.
Mr. Spock.
Captain.
If this doesn't work...
Spock nods.
Understood, Captain.
Kirk, clutching the duplicate to his chest, looks over at McCoy and smiles reassuringly at the anxious-looking doctor. Spock goes to the transporter control console.
Mr. Spock?
Spock sets the coordinates.
Ready.
He energizes the system. The two Kirks start to dematerialize, their outlines sparkling and fading. The platform stands empty. Spock recalibrates the controls. McCoy turns to him edgily.
Well, Mr. Spock.
Spock Slowly at first, Spock advances the two control sliders. A single Kirk reappears on the transporter pad in a beam of shimmering light. Spock and McCoy both watch the figure intently. He lurches slightly, gazing out of the chamber at them.
Jump.
Kirk steps confidently off the platform.
Get those men aboard fast.
Right away, Captain.
Moments later, Sulu and the other three crewmen are being stretchered out of the transporter room towards sick bay.
Severe exposure, frostbite, but I think they'll make it. How do you feel, Jim?
How? I've seen a part of myself no man should ever see.
Captain Kirk steps onto the bridge of the USS Enterprise and goes over to Spock.
Status report, green.
All sections report ready, sir.
Good.
Thank you, Mr. Spock. From both of us.
Shall I pass that on to the crew, sir?
The imposter's back where he belongs. Let's forget him.
Spock raises his eyebrows, the ghost of a smile on his stern features. Yeoman Rand comes in.
Captain? The imposter told me what happened.
Oh?
Who he really was. And I'd just like to say that... Well, sir, what I'd like to say is that...
Thank you, Yeoman.
He steps down to the captain's chair. The hapless yeoman goes over to Spock and gives him a report to sign off.
The imposter had some interesting qualities, wouldn't you say, yeoman?
She gives him a prim look, turns her back, and goes.
This is the captain speaking. Navigator, set in course correction. Helmsman, steady as she goes.
This audio description was written and produced by IMS for the Sci-Fi Channel.